Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. There's no business like your business. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
All right, this one comes in from Sammy, Slingin' Sammy, who asked the question, RamosLaw.com, text line 303-713-1043. Mark, I really was impressed by what I heard from Vic Fangio yesterday, but can you ease my concerns about him never having been a head coach before?
I think there's two things. Obviously, Gary Kubiak is going to be on this staff, and so there is going to be opportunities to have counsel. You know, you're going to be talking about situations and scenarios late in games and say, hey, man, what do you think about this is what I'm thinking about. So you're going to have somebody, a sounding board. Not that you need it all the time. Not that you're going to use it all the time. But you're going to have a sounding board. And I think that's important. And when I met with, the first time I met with Sean McVay, I asked him about the hire of Wade Phillips. He said, man, I needed that sounding board. I'm smart enough to know what I don't know, and I need occasionally to run something by somebody who's been there, who's done that, who's had both successes and failures. Like, that's just smart. And so that part of it's smart. The other thing is, man, Vic has been calling the defense now for, I think, of the 32 years he's been a coordinator, for like 22 of those 32 years or something ridiculous like that. He has seen every scenario. He is mature. He understands this game. Like, are there going to be a few mistakes made along the way from a clock management standpoint? Of course. There are with every coach. Every coach has some of those gaffes you don't expect from a coach. Hey, Bill Belichick, you know, what would Belichick do? What would B, Belichick, D, WWBD. Whew. Man, that's a lot of work in the morning right there on a snowy morning. What would Belichick do? Like, you saw it. He lost a game against Miami when the quarterback had to throw a 76-yard, like, Hail Mary, and he had Gronkowski. He took his best defender out, put Gronkowski to defend the Hail Mary, when you know, hey, that quarterback can't get it. He can't launch it 76 yards. You can't get your receivers down the field that deep to the end zone with a chance to catch it on that length of a Hail Mary. Like, you're not going to have enough time to throw it. So he made a classic coaching gaffe that cost them a game in Miami. And they gave up the hook and lateral, and the rest is history, man. That's a classic coaching gaffe by a guy that we consider the best in the business when it comes to managing the clock and situational football. So mistakes will be made. It's how many you make, the limitation of those mistakes. Not making the same mistake twice, recidivism. Boom.
So the idea of having never been a head coach before, and all that goes with it, is overrated. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think there's importance to it, Mike. But I think a guy that's been around for as long as Fangio's been around, it mitigates some of that importance. And I think also having a guy who has been a head coach for, what, 8 years in Houston and 2 years here and has a championship under his belt, a world championship under his belt, and probably did a better job of managing a football team than any coach has ever done regarding Peyton Manning, Hall of Famer, unbelievable, playing hurt, not playing well, managing him with Brock Osweiler and making the change and being steady Eddie through the whole process, even though, you know, Peyton was ready to strangle him. Does that matter to have that on your staff? Absolutely it matters.
But why, in your experience, why is it that not all terrific assistant coaches end up becoming very good head coaches? Wade Phillips.
Right.
Great, great defensive coach.
Yeah.
Not a very good head coach. Norv Turner, one of the most respected offensive minds out there, lousy head coach.
Right.
What is it? And I'm not being snarky. What misses? What ends up getting missed in the jump?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I wish I knew exactly what it was, because you know what I would do? I would make seven figures consulting for teams. Every year there's six guys who get fired, six or seven guys that get fired, as head coaches. And if I could put my finger on what's going to make the guy successful at the next level, man, I would have my own little cottage industry. I'd be like Mel Kiper. You know, when Mel Kiper started covering the draft, he's the only guy, big hair, snot-nosed kid covering the draft. And the next thing you know, it's more than a cottage industry. Now it's just it's an industry.
Yeah.
I mean, we're already starting. I mean, Mel and Todd and everybody else who covers the draft, hell, they've already gone through 3 or 4 mock drafts. And then, you know, I mean, Mike Mayock became a general manager.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's all I know.
Another bonus question mark. Can this team be a combination of both bad coaching and a lack of talent? Why does it have to be one or the other?
Of course it is. It's never just one or the other. Of course, it's a little bit of both. But you know, the thing you're saying is, hey, we weren't the most talented team, but we should have won more games because we were not coached appropriately. So I think that's where comes in the bad coaching and with good coaching and stability and a better culture. Now all of a sudden those things should be fixed, right? And I mean, isn't that like those 2 or 3 games you lost? Shouldn't those be won now?
That's the argument that's made.
Sure.
I don't think you can say that that the two are mutually exclusive. I don't think you can argue.
They go hand in hand.
Yes, but I think in this case, look, the Broncos, since Gary Kubiak coming off the Super Bowl year, started 4-0 mm-hmm. with Trevor Siemian, your guy, pay him $12 million per year.
It'd be a bargain now, wouldn't it, over Case Keenum? Wouldn't it give you clarity right now? Wouldn't that have been the great decision? You'd have total clarity, wouldn't you?
Would you have a problem bringing back Trevor, by the way?
No.
I mean, you could swing a trade for him very easily.
I mean, I wouldn't want him to come back as the starter.
Why not?
Because I've seen him play.
Would he be an upgrade over Case Keenum?
No, probably not.
No.
Do you think he'd be an upgrade?
All I know about Trevor Siemian is that I can still go into my mental Rolodex and remember that game in Cincinnati where the ball was flying down the field and he threw 4 touchdown passes. I don't have one of those games yet. In my Case Keenum Bronco Rolodex.
The problem is I think Trevor had the potential of being better than Case Keenum. I think he got so beat up and played, and I commend him for playing injured and playing hurt and having an old school mentality. I just think he got so beat down and so injured that he just became completely ineffective. That's what I think.
As to this debate about, is it coaching? Is it talent? Since Gary started out 4-0 the year after the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. he finished that season 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
Vance Joseph came in, went 5-11 and 6-10. So since that 4-0 start, the Broncos are 16-28. That right there to me is Exhibit A as to why it's a talent issue. And if you go 8-8 next year, mm-hmm. okay, you went from 6-10 to 8-8. That still tells me that it's a talent issue that needs
sure.
to be addressed. Now you go 10-6, then you know what? With this basically being,
mm-hmm.
you know, the same kind of team. Yes, there are going to be changes here and there, but basically the same
right.
kind of team. Certainly the same quarterback. And you go 10-6, then it is clearly it was clearly about coaching. So I think that there are ways to look at this in a way in which it's talent or it's coaching, and you can't just sort of backpedal and say, well, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of, no. if we want to get back to the point where it's about playing for Super Bowls,
right,
then simply saying, well, we went 6-10, but we should have been 8-8. Really? That's where we're at now,
right.
as a fan base, that 8-8 is where we should be.
How much of this will be, if you do go 10-6, Mike, that it still will be, oh, this is just a tremendous job of coaching, because there's still, see, I would look at it like tremendous job of coaching, but there's still a lot of issues. Well, unless they fix a lot of things going forward, but I still think there's a lot of talent issues here on this roster. Now we're getting into the, you know, we've gotten the new head coach. Now we're getting into the procurement stage of the NFL season, meaning you're going through free agency. You're going to go through the draft. You're going to secure players. and build your franchise, build your roster, which I think dramatically, like it dramatically needs to happen. I look at the left tackle, the kid from Alabama. You know, I there's a lot of things that need to happen here as an organization.
But be careful what you're saying when you say, well, okay, we went 6-10 with Vance, but if we had better coaching, we would have been 9-7. You're still saying then that even with good coaching, we've got 9-7 talent. That's the point I'm at, is that
right.
You can't, I don't think enough, and I know people think I have it in for Elway.
Right.
No, I want the job that is being done by the front office when it comes to bringing in the talent to be given its proper amount of responsibility. And if you're going to make the argument that, yeah, we were so poorly coached last year, we were 6-10, we should have been 9-7, you're still making my point. If outstanding coaching gets us to 9-7, what does that really get us? It's certainly not getting us past the Chiefs and past the Chargers and competing for Super Bowls. So until we get better talent, I'm not going to cheer 9-7.
Right. Even if you went 9-7 this year, Mike, okay, you went 9-7 this year. Let's say Vance went 9-7. I would still say this talent's not good enough. And you'd say, well, they went 9-7 and you know, whatever. The talent's not good. Well, certainly not good enough to compete on a consistent basis with the Chargers or with Kansas City. 9-7 ain't going to get you there. You know what? 9-7 is going to have you on the outside looking in. So I still think there needed to be better coaching. I agree with the coaching change. But I think ultimately this talent needs to increase. And I know one place it dramatically needs to increase, and that's on the line of scrimmage. Offensive line of scrimmage needs to happen.
Great coaching, says this texter. Great coaching can take average talent and turn it into greatness. Okay, so all it's going to take is a little bit of coaching and Garrett Bowles is going to become a Pro Bowl left tackle. All it's going to take is a little coaching and Case Keenum is going to become an elite quarterback.
Here's the thing about a guy like Garrett Bowles. Garrett Bowles has elite level athleticism. So, you know, it depends on how you define talent. If you're defining talent as athleticism, if somebody can reach him and coach him and get him to use proper technique and to play within himself and to quit hog-tying people and quit mutton-busting, you know, then, yeah, you can coach somebody into greatness. You don't take average athleticism and make it great athleticism through coaching. Now you can play with discipline, technique, and you can do all those things. So you certainly can get the most out of the talent you have if you coach it correctly. Like there's no question about that. But it's more than that, man. You have got to have the right mentality. You've got to have the right football. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be that intelligent. I mean, I'm living proof. You don't have to be that intelligent. What you have to have is great football acumen. You have to understand, you know, concepts and what teams are trying to do to you. And you have to understand what you're trying to execute.
So in a league where we're seeing more and more coaches just being hired just to have a relationship with one player.
Right.
The quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
Who cares about the rest of the 52 guys?
Right.
It's all about finding your quarterback whisperer as your head coach.
Mm-hmm.
This one's for you. I'm just going to watch your blood pressure go up here as I read this. Mark, I'm not sure what Elway sees in Kubiak. It's not that complicated. Develop an offensive scheme that is tailored to your offensive players, primarily your quarterback. That's why Freddie Kitchens is the head coach in Cleveland. He understood that basic principle. That's why he won more games in his 2 months as head coach than Hugh Jackson did in 3 years as head coach. He wasn't the head coach. Greg Williams was. Anyway, some people get it. Others don't. Kubiak doesn't get it. Kubiak made Peyton freaking Manning, big block letters, look like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league because he made Peyton play in a Kubiak offense.
All right. So I just think, blood boiling.
I'm leading you into the conversation that you had with a couple general managers yesterday. Not named John Elway. Go ahead.
Right.
Reset that.
So the conversation I had with I talked to two general managers yesterday, off the record, so I'm not giving you names of who I talked to, but both prominent general managers in this league, not named John Elway. Obviously, GMs from different teams. And the consensus was there is nothing that any team is running that's unique. That is like, oh my gosh, you just revolutionized football with that route combination. Everybody runs the same stuff. Everybody gets in a 3-by-1 formation. You know what they run? They run all go special. Everybody gets in a stack, 3-man stack formation, whether it's tight end, you know, running back, wide receiver, or 3-wide receiver. It doesn't matter. Everybody runs some type of combo of out, like out, up, and in, right? And it's all about picking man coverage, you know, and picking people apart. Everybody runs, you know, curl flat. Everybody runs slant flat. Everybody runs some type of scissors combination. Everybody runs, you know, seams versus defenses. You know, that's what people do. And the reason is that it's so accessible today. The film, way more than even back in my day, is that there is a website, and, you know, it's NFL Exos, and you have to have Exo, you know, XOS, we just call it Exos, but you have to have access from an organization, which I do, so I can plug in week 13, I can plug in week 13 third down 7+. I can get everybody in the NFL's 3rd-and-7+, both offense and defense. Right there. It collates, is that the right word? Within 30 seconds, bam, I've got it. I can go through each team. Each team had, call it, 8 plays of 3rd-and-7+. I can watch each team's 3rd-and-7+, and I can go, boom, this is what they're in. This is what they're running on defense. Here they are. They're in a 3-by-1. They're in a 2-by-2. They're in a, you know, whatever it is. They're in 11 personnel. They're in 22 personnel, whatever it is. And I can look at each team's. Then I can say, hey, you know what? Instead of doing that, 3rd-and-7+, let me look at the 3-by-1 formations. Bam. Every team's 3-by-1 formations come up. Every team that defended a 3-by-1 formation comes up. I can look at those. Okay. What is it? What other parameter do I want to look at? And this is now, it's more of a copycat league than it's ever been in any situation. It's more situationally football based than it's ever been. And so you can look at all that stuff and the time required where it used to take you days to break that stuff down. Now it takes you hours to break it down. So everybody's running the same stuff. Said where the evolution comes in, or where the genius comes in, or where the whatever you want to call it, where the creativity comes in, is how you match up your play action game to what you run in the passing game. And if they don't match up, you're not very good in that part of the game. If they match up perfectly, you're great. And that's really what it boils down to, man. The consensus was this, is how can, and we heard Vic Fangio talk about deceptives, right? How can you create deceptives? How can you, and I'll give you an example, and he's not a young guy, Andy Reid, 60 whatever years old, right? One of the kind of quote unquote great play callers or great play designers that we have in this league. Why? Because he'll create one formation and one motion out of that formation. And he'll have 5 different plays off that identical look. So you're in, you know, whatever formation you're in, and you run a kind of jet sweep to one of your receivers across, and off that jet sweep, you just run dive. And the next play, the next time you have it, you run the exact same formation, the exact same motion, you hand it to the jet sweeper. Now all of a sudden, same exact thing, the jet sweeper comes by and you're running some type of triple option off the jet sweep. Then the next thing you do, the jet sweep comes by and you throw a screen off the jet sweep. And then the next thing you know, you have that same motion, that same thing, and you've seen dive and you've seen option and you've seen screen and you've seen, you know, you've seen everything. And then all of a sudden, guess what? We screen to the opposite side, off away from the jet sweep. So now as a defense, you're like, every time they've run this, it's looked exactly the same, only it's been completely different. That's the deceptives. And the guys who understand that, the other thing is the guys, this was another thing the GMs told me, the guys who have the ability to recognize what you're in, find a matchup, to exploit what you're in. Find a linebacker that has to, based on the way you're playing defense, has to cover a slot receiver so I get an automatic matchup or a running back, or you know what I'm going to give you defensively, and we adjust the route based on the way you're playing the defense.
Give me a coach or two, based on your conversation, that best describes what you're talking about. The idea that they can run six different plays, they all look the same. The running plays look the same as the play action plays. Give me a coach.
Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan.
Okay.
I think McVay does a great job of it. I think Nagy does a great job of it. I think Doug Peterson. Remember when Doug Peterson was hired? He's an older offensive coordinator for a long time under Andy Reid's scheme. Doug Peterson, go back and look at it when Doug Peterson was hired. The worst hire in the history of football. That's what people were saying about Doug Peterson. He got a championship ring, he's back in the playoffs.
Bill Belichick is on record as saying that Andy Reid is the toughest guy for him to try to figure out.
Mm-hmm. And it was Mike Shanahan.
Because here's a guy who's a master at looking for tendencies and picking out things that are different, and yet everything looks the same.
Everything looks identical, and yet there is a bunch of and they're simple concepts.
Right.
They're the same concepts.
I know you're a fan of Kubiak, and I know you believe that Kubiak, A, is modern enough, and B, it's not like NFL offenses have gotten so ultra-modern that they still don't have old-school elements to it. But this is what bothers a lot of people about the idea of Kubiak taking over the offense again. This past year, the Broncos were 19th in total offense. Total offense is just gauged by yards.
Yeah.
Okay? They were 19th in total offense. And they were 24th in scoring offense at 20.6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? 19th total, 20.6. Gary's last year here with Trevor Siemian as his quarterback, they were 27th in total offense and 22nd in scoring offense at 20.8.
Mm-hmm.
So the last time Gary was here running an offense, the Broncos averaged 20.8 points per game. This past season, they averaged 20.6.
All right.
Kate, can you understand why there is some nervousness, anxiety, trepidation about whether or not he really is the answer
for
transforming this offense?
And I understand that with Peyton Manning as well. And Kubiak had to adjust a lot of what he did offensively.
Now, this wasn't with Peyton.
But to accommodate Peyton, so that was earlier Texter who said that. Kubiak was trying to create an opportunity for Peyton to kind of extend and take some pressure off of Peyton. And obviously it didn't work. Peyton was going to run offense one way. And I get that. And it became, you know, quote unquote mistake. Okay. So we're good with that. Now we can admit that, but I think the bottom line is this goes back to the talent level, Mike. Like to run that offense and to be really good, man, you have got to be tied together up front and you got to be able to run the football. And you know, in a day and age where the one, people don't want to run the football, but two, for the Broncos, I've said this for a long time. This has been the better part of a decade where your offensive line has stunk. They just haven't played the way they need to play. And that's a personnel issue.
Not enough talent. Offensive line is stunk. Personnel issue. Man, you really do hate John Elway, don't you? Mark hates John Elway. Man, the two of them were laying down on the field,
looking at each other after clinching
a Super Bowl and going, how you doing? Good, how you doing? And now, just a few years later, hatred.
The man in the mom jeans is correct.
No, the man in the mom jeans is not correct.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
But I do
just venom.
I do like
venom.
How you switched. I do like, you know, the best defense is the best offense is a good no offense. The best defense is a good offense. I don't know. Go on the attack. Let me just change to that because I'm not sure what I'm talking about. Go on the attack, Mike. I like the way you flipped the switch, flipped the script, and made me the bad guy.
V is for Vendetta. Coming up, what's the rest of the Broncos coaching staff going to look like? We'll get the answers from our Bronco insider, Troy Rank, next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
All right, let's turn to our Denver 7 Bronco insider. It is the one and only Troy Rank. Troy, you were there yesterday at Vic Fangio's opening press conference. Just a couple general observations, impressions that you took away.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, there was concern he might not win the press conference, but you win games, so who matters? Well, what, you know, how does that matter? Well, the reality was, I thought he hit a home run because he was so authentic. He's comfortable in his own skin. You know, I said in my Denver 7 report, like, where's Waldo? Where's Fangio? The guy's been blending into the background for 32 years and giving the moment to step forward. He was just himself. You know, if you like meat and potatoes, an old pickup truck, sweatpants, you're going to like Fangio. And that's, I just like the fact that he wasn't trying to pretend he was anybody but the guy he's been for the last three decades. And his message of discipline, I mean, a lot of play with the death by inches, but the reality of accountability and just like, hey, if we let one thing slide, it becomes two. And you showing up to a meeting 30 seconds late isn't a big deal, but then the next guy does it. And the next guy, next thing we know, 6 weeks later, there's been erosion of our core values. And that message resonated with players I spoke to yesterday.
How important, in your experience covering not only the NFL, but Major League Baseball as well, how important is that authenticity from the guy in charge?
Yeah, well, you know this, Mark. You played professional sports. Guys who play at the highest level can see through BS. And so if you're one guy on Monday and then you're a different guy on Friday and then Saturday in front of the team, you're an actor and trying to reinvent yourself as a character, you can't do that over the course of a season. Guys see through it. So when you're authentic and you're honest and you're transparent, and you know, Gary Kubiak was like that. Like, then you don't have to worry about what did I tell this guy or what did I tell that guy? Is this guy, what's he think of me? You're comfortable and with who you are in your relationships. And that was the thing I noticed from Gary Kubiak. I would take away the coaching part of it. He was always transparent with his players. It was always we, not me. You're playing for the guy next to you. And in Vic Fangio, when I talk to players who play for him, that's the message is like, he's like this great teacher you have and you don't want to show up and, you know, you didn't study the night before. He makes you better that way. So we'll see how it translates as a head coach. But guys at the pro level see through it very quickly. If you're trying to fake it till you make it, they'll see through it.
What do you think the makeup of the rest of the coaching staff is going to look like? And I'm going even beyond everyone's about Gary Kubiak. What about the rest of the staff? Give us some names.
Well, quickly, the reason Gary Kubiak wasn't confirmed yesterday is they wanted this to be Vic Fangio's day, three decades in the making. If they had said, oh, yeah, Gary Kubiak's going to be our offensive coordinator or assistant head coach in charge of offense, that becomes the press conference. And Vic Fangio earned the right to have that day, and that's part of the reason down that way. But, yeah, Kubiak will be on it in some capacity. Clint Kubiak, his son, will be there. I don't know about Rick Dennison as the line coach. It didn't end well here the last time. But as a line coach, we're in a very narrow role. Could that work? Perhaps. I mean, we'll see on that, but it didn't go well as an offensive coordinator. But again, as a line coach, that's different. That's been his area of expertise in the past. Ed Donatel, I know he's interviewing other places. He would be a candidate for the defensive coordinator's job. I expect Bill Kolar to stay on the D-line, the receivers coach to stay. Motkins, the running backs coach, has a good chance of staying. Tom McMahon, this the special teams coach, has a really good chance of staying. So there's going to be some holdovers. Kubiak's going to be involved. The defensive coordinator position is interesting, but not as much as in years past because, as Vic said yesterday, he's calling the defense. That's why they hired him.
Yeah, no question about that. And he's been great. How much of an adjustment? Did you get to talk to him about the adjustment of, you know, being a coordinator, being in the box that whole time during the course of his career and now being on the sideline and not only calling plays, but managing the football game?
Yeah, it only came up briefly. There was so much going on with just the general stuff, so the more specific stuff, hopefully we'll see him in a couple of weeks when they introduce the coaching staff, or even maybe in fewer time. But that's going to be a transition. There's no doubt. You know, Mark, I mean, when you watch it from a booth and watch it from the sideline, you got to have then guys in the booth you trust that are your eyes and kind of the voice in your head. But he's a football guy through and through, and he's done it, you know, for so long, 32 years, 19 as a coordinator. I have no doubt he'll assimilate in terms of calling a game defensively, but it's the managing the game, clock management, down and distance. Those are the things that you keep an eye on. And that's where having a couple of veterans on staff can help. But he was great yesterday when he was talking about when I got hired with Matt Nagy, or Matt Nagy joined the Bears staff, and Matt said, I'm going to lean on you. And he said, he goes, he leaned on me like two or three times. And he's like, if I have to lean on somebody more than two or three times, then basically I'm not qualified for this job. And I just loved his matter-of-fact answer. Like, if I'm just leaning on people all the time, then why am I in the job? I wasn't ready. So I'm just curious how it plays out. I just love the fact he is who he is in terms of just authentic. This is what I am. This is who I've been for 32 years, and I'm ready to make a go of this.
I would think for you, the biggest takeaway from that press conference, as somebody that was on the beat for 15 years covering some bad Rockies team, is that a Rockies World Series is in our future.
Yeah, his connection to baseball. So he was talking about it. It's funny because he was in Chicago, and he's good friends with Joe Maddon. And Joe Maddon's one of my favorite baseball people in the world. Good friends with Maddon. They win a World Series. He was in San Francisco for 4 years. They won five years. They won three World Series in 5 years. He was in Houston where they ended up going to their second World Series, and now they've since won a World Series. And then he comes to the Brockies, and he's like, well, of course it's good news. They better be feeling good about it. So, yeah, wherever he goes, he brings baseball luck. He did grow up as a huge Phillies fan, big Mike Schmidt fan. He doesn't go to bed typically without checking the Phillies scores, even when they're on the West Coast and he was living back east. So he's a big baseball guy. He told me yesterday, I'm one of the few people left that can sit through a nine-inning game and watch it, enjoy it every pitch.
Wow, he is old school.
Exactly. That's what I said. I was like, well, I haven't heard somebody say that in a long time, but...
If you're looking for
kids a lot. They don't watch it like that.
I'm gonna have to go over there and head down to Coors Field with them because I can do the same thing. I'm ridiculous that way.
Well, I'm sure the happiest guy besides John Elway was probably Jeff Breidich yesterday. All right, good hire, nice job.
Yes.
All right,
Troy. We're going to the World Series.
We're going to the World Series. All right, nice hire. Good job, Troy. Thank you.
Tip.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Bronco Insider, brought to us by Tranny Law. Have you or someone you know been charged with a DUI? Call for a free consultation at 303-333-1816 or TRANILaw.com. But I think that's the biggest takeaway from what he accomplished yesterday is we can debate all you want about whether the talent is here or the talent is not here. But one thing that he undeniably will try to bring, and I think it's awesome, and I think every really, really good team has it, is toughness,
mm-hmm.
discipline, accountability. There's nothing wrong with that. That kind of stuff never goes out of style.
No, it doesn't go in and out of vogue. It doesn't go out of style. It is one of the main building blocks. If you're creating a foundation, you have to have a strong, you know, foundation and cornerstones. It's kind of a cornerstone principle to any great organization or any great foundation. And so, like, that stuff is good. The authenticity, that's something that's really special or really good and something you don't usually get, Mike, from young coaches because they're all about, hey, back in Dallas or back in New England, we got a way of doing things. You know, Belichick used to say, Vic Fangio didn't have to go, you know, Matt Nagy says, or, you know what I mean? Like, this is the way football is done. Young coaches always have to refer back to the guy who mentored them.
Right. This guy's been, his coaching journey has been so long and so diverse and so extended that, mm-hmm. that he's drawing off a number of people that he's coached with and under. So for him to just say, well, let me do it like this, he can't do it because he's had so many influence.
Right.
So it's kind of picking and parsing and probably not even doing it knowingly,
mm-hmm.
taking hopefully the best of everybody he's been around with. What will a Vic Fangio speech to the Broncos sound like?
Mm.
We have a pretty good idea, and we'll share that with you next. Everybody wants to know, What are we getting in Vic Fangio? I mean, we know we're getting a guy who knows his defensive X's and O's, right?
Yes, yes, correct.
But can he lead?
Mm.
Can he motivate?
Right.
Can he command the room?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All
can he
important.
Inspire?
Inspiration, very important.
Can
all those
he
things.
Do all those things?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have discovered some very hard to find, but we find it hard to find audio of Vic Fangio addressing a football team. Here it is.
Now, let's analyze what's been working for us. Not a damn thing's been working for us. Like this damn suit doesn't work for me. And this stinking tie, this damn shirt, it doesn't work for me. You know how to play winning hard-nosed football? You play football like De Niro played football. A guy who gave his life for this football team. He was a 140-pound halfback, and he played like a damn wild man. No, like a damn rampaging beast. And that's the way you're going to do it. You go out there, you take your hands off, and you're down their necks. Let us pray.
Like the fact that he prays after a good
chills.
Motivational speech.
I get chills. I'm going to run through a wall. Yeah. I would run through a wall for Vic Fangio.
Man.
Actually, that is the great actor Robert Loggia in Necessary Roughness, who I found myself as I was watching and mm-hmm. listening to, I kind of thought of him.
Right.
I actually did. Remember that? This is the guy who was, he was all kinds of movies. He was in Big.
Yes.
Independence Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great character actor. Yeah. Great, great character actor. And he kind of reminded me a little bit as I was like, where have I heard this guy before? Where have I seen Vic Fangio before? There it is.
Yep. You remember him from Big. He was the guy that ran the toy store that ended up hiring Hanks.
Hanks were dancing on the big piano
there. That one. Is that kind of how that goes?
Yes, just like that.
Just exactly
just
like that?
Just exactly like that.
That's great. I mean, that just fires you up, though, right? I love the fact that you can have this tirade.
Yes.
Just this curse-laden tirade, and then you get done with it, and you say, okay, let's pray.
Let's pray.
I've been in that meeting many times before. All right, take a knee. Our Father who art in heaven.
Wait a minute, wasn't this the same guy that was just MFing me a moment ago?
Exactly. That's how it works. Just get your butt reamed, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, drop to a knee. Our Father.
Well, hopefully we get to the point very quickly where we're back in divisional weekend. Best weekend in sports, in my opinion.
It's great.
So here we go. Two games today, tomorrow, two games on Sunday. Let's start with the NFC.
Okay.
You got the, Cowboys at the Rams.
Right.
Excuse me. The McVays.
Right.
Because they're not the Rams anymore.
No.
They're the McVays.
The Los Angeles.
Clearly, this is just all about McVay.
The Los Angeles McVays. I am going to go with the McVays. I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be close. I think Dallas does a great job of dominating the line of scrimmage. I just think there are enough offensive weapons. Todd Gurley is healthy. They'll get back to running the football. They'll have the play action stuff off there. I believe the McVays win there. They haven't won. The McVays haven't won a playoff game yet. They lost last year's playoff game.
Wait a minute. Sean McVay hasn't even won a playoff game yet?
No.
But he's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean, every team that's got a opening, save for the Broncos, is looking for the next McVay.
Yeah. They haven't won.
McVay.
Yeah, they have not won a playoff game yet. Not in no fault of his. So I'm going to go with the McVays, and then I'm going to go with Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints. I know they were great all. I know they haven't been great in the last couple of weeks. I think they get their stuff together. Drew Brees, Sean Payton. They'll have their offense clicking. I think this is an underrated defense, really good offensive line, good running game. I'm going to take the Saints.
Okay. So you go chalk in the NFC. What about the AFC?
AFC, like, I just.
Showtime!
I look at Showtime. I look at just the history there. I think it's hard to buck the trend. I think the Colts are playing as good a football as anybody in football. I think Andrew Luck is playing great. I think this offensive line is just dominating the line of scrimmage. I think they dominate the line of scrimmage. Great matchup this weekend, by the way, is Earl Grey versus Chris Jones. Chris Jones had a sack in like 11 straight games from the inside versus Earl Grey, who is just going to flat back you and then rub his nether regions across the face.
That'd be Quentin Nelson.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take the Colts. And then,
oh, please, can you imagine? I mean, we're insufferable. Can you imagine the extra oomph, the extra gear of insufferability we'll kick into on Monday?
Oh, my God.
If the September Darlings, who we called the September Darlings back when they were the rage of the NFL, and we always kept saying, you're right, Chief fan.
Yeah.
You own September.
Yeah, you're the best September
team. But we'll
team
talk come
seen.
January. Well, guess what? January's here. And Chief Fan, I know you're a gripping right now.
Oh, yeah.
You're a gripping.
We should do a simulcast. Maybe we just find any station in Kansas City just so we can come on if they lose.
Oh.
Of course, we're not going to do it if they win. But if they lose,
nope.
Get a simulcast with some Kansas City Chiefs station and just rip them for being a great, you know, a great front runner.
So for all the enthusiastic, confident, overconfident, brash, arrogant Chief fans out there right now, 1-11 in your last 12 playoff games.
Ouch.
Haven't won a home playoff game since Joe Montana was your quarterback in 1993.
Mm. And he is not even known as a Chief. He's known as a Niner.
And you've lost six home playoff games in a row. Just
Kansas City!
Something to chew on.
Home playoff games in a row?
Yes.
Wow, you guys are pathetic losers. Yeah, last year they lost to Mariota's Titans. Didn't Mariota complete a pass to himself for a touchdown?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally.
Good defense, Chiefs. Yeah, finally.
I think Bronco Country finds themselves in kind of a unique situation right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're so tired of, over with the Patriots and Tom Brady, you will be rooting hard for Phillip Rivers on Sunday, won't you?
I will be.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood!
You know, and this goes against everything that I stand for because of my love affair with Tom Brady. So.
Chargers are the better team.
I think the Chargers are. I don't think there's any question that the Chargers are the better team.
Anybody who's picking the Patriots, you're basing it just based on history. Because there's nothing about the way they're playing. They've had their worst season since 2009. Now still, it's 11-5 and they finished with a bye, but still, it's their worst season since 2009.
Do you think that if the Chargers beat the Patriots in Foxborough, okay, this happens, do you think I need to write like a breakup letter with Tom Brady?
It might be time. Might be time to move on. It was a great run.
Hey, we've grown apart over these last 18 seasons. I've just felt that we've grown apart. I no longer feel that spark.
It's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
Actually, it is you.
Yeah.
It is you.
It's not
it
you.
Is, it's not me, it's you.
Right? It's, yeah. It's not me.
It's you.
I can't love a loser. Yeah. It may be time.
So, all right. So, and we'll leave it with this. So we were talking about, Vic Fangio reminding us of Robert Loggia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually, somebody brought up an actor from that time. If we're going old school with Vic, there's actually somebody who reminds us more. I'm going way back here. But as soon as soon as I say this and you picture this guy, you're going to think Vic Fangio.
Okay.
Mel, who ran the diner in Alice. Mel Tabak.
Good old Mel.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, you know what?
I know, Millennial Ben, that's lost on you, fine, I get it. Those of our age, those of you who are in your, you know, 40s and 50s, you know.
Right.
Mel
right.
from Alice.
Yeah, Mel from Alice. I bet you Fangio.
That's who I think of.
I bet you Fangio could cook up like a, you know, a grilled cheese and a fried egg. He'd be good in the kitchen.
Well, he's from Philly. Bet you got a good cheesesteak.
Oh, yeah, over a hot grill. Fangio?
Yeah.
Orders up! I'm just going to have, next time I see him, I'm just going to, could you do me a favor?
He's got a little paper hat on.
Yeah, could you just say, orders up! Put this hat on and say, orders up!
We'll talk to him at training camp, and he'll just have like a little paper hat. Hey, listen, before we do this interview, can you do a little role playing for me and dress up?
I'll have one of those little spinny things that the receipts hang on. I go, could you spin this for me real quick? Put this paper hat on and go, what is up?
All right. The other guys in the room are just staring at us stone-faced. They just don't see the humor in that. They're miserable.
Well, that's
miserable,
that's
millennials. All right. Pritch, Cecil, coming your way next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.